Hello all and welcome back. Thank you as ever, everyone, for continuing to get in touch, sharing your thoughts and opinions. The best place to do so, comment section below. And if you have a longer story, maybe some pictures, you can email hi@tuesdayatdobbs.com. Let's start off. Thunderbirds, the Triumph Thunderbird, the big 1600 and 1700 ones. You all love them. These are incredibly highly regarded bikes that I could have spent the entire episode reading out your praise for these big British cruisers. To keep it short and sweet, I'll start off with this from Australia. Freddie Les from Australia here, I've just watched your video, and as a Thunderbird Storm owner, I can agree with you. They're amazing bikes, very suited for our Australian conditions, i.e. big distances. Comfortable, powerful, and very reliable. This popped up consistently, the reliability praise. My Thunderbird has over 100,000 kilometers and still going strong. One of our riders in our group, we meet twice a year at various locations. We call them Thunderbird Flockings. I love it. Has over 240,000 kilometers on his Thunderbird with no major issues reported. They're keepers for sure. And I will wrap up the Thunderbird discussion just for now with this from an American rider. This is Veltro 1960. I bought a 2010 Thunderbird from a Harley Davidson dealership in Tyler, Texas for $7,900. Only 11 miles on the clock. This is where it gets fascinating. Soak this in. 11 miles on the clock for this 2010 Thunderbird. It had sat in the showroom or on the showroom floor in Texas from 2010 to 2018 when I bought it. That is 8 years sitting in a showroom and no one bought it. They just did not sell very well in the USA. I've gone to the East Coast twice, rode the Blue Ridge Parkway twice from Texas. My biggest complaint is that it eats rear tires. I also have a 2003 Triumph T100, Great British Iron. Right, this is another thing that popped up. Everyone loves these bikes, the reliability, everything on point. But the Americans got in touch with some fascinating stuff, just basically saying these did not sell in the USA because if you want to make a success of selling a cruiser in the USA, the honest truth is it has to be an Indian or Harley. If you don't have those badges on, forget about it. So I'm going to show you three examples now of how worthless big capacity British cruisers are in the USA. This is insane. I'll start here with a 2005 Triumph Rocket. This is the huge 2.3 litre engine. This seller is selling it, his dad's bike, and it's $2,700. $2,700 in pounds sterling is £1,996 for this Triumph Rocket. That is under £2,000. He inherited it from his dad in 2022, needs to get back on the road, but it's been kept in an insulated garage and drained of fuel, so should need almost nothing to get it back on the road. So that's a sub £2,000 Rocket there to start off with. I'll do two more here. This one is completely phenomenal. This is from a dealer, a Triumph Thunderbird Storm, and it's $4,500. That translates in pounds to £3,300. For a Triumph Thunderbird Storm, when in the UK, they go for about £8,000. In fact, these are such tiny sellers that the dealership here selling this bike for £3,300 can't even be bothered to add stuff like mileage. Nothing's been added, because clearly they see there's no point spending time doing a proper advert. Final one I'll do here. Triumph Rocket 3, 2011 model, $4,500. Again, that's £3,300 for Triumph Rocket with all of the panniers and a mileage of 7,000. Speechless. I don't even know what to say about that. It's so incredible. Let's move on. Reliability. Let's carry on here. Don't worry, please. You've bought a Honda. You're in safe hands. You can rest easy. You can ride your bike and never have to worry that anything mechanical will ever happen to it because they are all bulletproof. Back over to Australia. Freddie, I walked into a local dealer and stumbled upon a a beautiful 2014 Honda Goldwing F6B, the predecessor to the new base model Goldwing. I had done a ton of research on these bikes, and with only 60,000 kilometers on the notoriously reliable Mile Munchers, it was a no-brainer. $16,000, that's £7,600 sterling, poorer. I picked her up one clear Saturday morning and set off home, marveling at the almost 100 horsepower difference between my now sold Royal Enfield Scram 411 and the glorious new black F6B. But tragedy struck. Less than 400 kilometers of ownership and my beautiful new to me Honda Goldwing started with plumes of thick white smoke one morning before setting off for a group ride in early February. This is not something you'd expect. Many a phone call and many a phone exchange and a brief mediation by the state government in regards to consumer laws and protections, and the dealer provided me with a full refund. This is where it gets just insanely painful. Imagine if you had to pay this. I did get a post-mortem of the poor battered Goldwing, who required a half lower engine rebuild, quoted in the region, get ready for this, of $18,000 to get it back on the road. That's just under £9,000 sterling. There gets a point here with motorbikes where it just gets ridiculous if you have to have a £9,000 build for a lower half engine build. It just gets to a point where, sorry, it's been designed wrongly. If you can have a point where it's a £9,000 build like that, then the bike has been designed badly, because a motorbike should never have a bill like that. Now bikeless and coming to winter in Australia, I'm considering the benefits of a manufacturer warranty on a bike. There we go. I'm now looking between a Harley Davidson Road Glide and the new sportier Indian Challenger. As always, I'd love to hear what other options I may have missed. I'm looking towards newer bikes for that warranty to stick, but I would like to stick with the V-twin for ease of maintenance, as the Goldwing repair bills have more than scared my partner and I away from the complicated technician-required engines. That's Kieran in Australia. Kieran, it's just so lucky you, for example, didn't buy it from a private seller, keep it, not ride it for a year or so, so you've got no kind of fight back to get your money back, because a £9,000 repair bill, that would render it a write-off that 99% of people can't and won't be willing to pay for. Kieran, good luck with the new search. Let me know what you go for. Carrying on now, two postie bikes across Australia. I thought you would like to hear about my father and son trip across Australia. Just soak in these pictures as I read this out. What a trip this is. This is from Melbourne across to the Nullarbor Plain to Perth and then back again. First of all, right now, I'm just going to put a map of where this trip is going from Perth, or from Melbourne to Perth. Because you see the bit in the middle, there is nothing there. Just long roads of nothingness. I don't even want to think what would happen if you break down. So this is Nullarbor Plain to Perth and back again, brackets, I'm the father. We completed just over a total of 8,500 kilometers on a pair of Honda CT11 or CT110 postie bikes. These were the bikes that the Australian Post Office used to deliver mail. In February of this year, our bikes are a 1999 model and a 2010 model. The only modifications being an additional fuel tank to cover the long distances between fuel stops. What we were attempting wasn't really what these bikes were intended to be used for, which was for the postman, there you go, delivering letters and packages at a docile speed. Our usual speed was around 40 miles an hour, 65 kilometers. Although getting in behind a passing road train, traveling at twice our speed and into their slipstream, could pull us up to 80 kilometers an hour for a while. The roads are quite empty, so it was quite safe. But despite our attempts, we still got stopped by the police for going too slowly. I love it. Upon asking how he suggests that we make the bikes go faster, he just gave up and went away. What a great experience it was. Hot, windy, and slow, but we had the most amazing time. The emptiness of the long open roads have a certain beauty in their blandness. Then there's the incredible scenery, which appears from time to time. We both have other bikes. I've got a Bonneville T100, and my son has a Street Scrambler. But that's too easy for this journey. The trip wasn't without dramas, including an engine removal to fix an oil leak and losing a tappet cover, along with all of my oil, 350 kilometers from the nearest major town. But that's all part of the story. Michael, you've gone through the nightmare scenario, exactly what I think would be like from a horror film. You're in the middle of nowhere in Australia and you have a breakdown. No, with no phone reception, but the support and assistance from other people out in the bush is amazing. I only had to ride 65 kilometers on a bush mechanic fix using bits of junk lost at the side of the road and using waste oil until the problem was resolved by a replacement part donated by a complete stranger who wouldn't take any payment for the part. The total time was 24 days, but we arrived home safely, albeit a bit hot, dusty and tired. I'm 66 years old and the itch has already started again, so plans for next trip. You can also check out a short video of the trip on Michael's YouTube channel. To do it on those two old postie bikes, and to have to take the engine out while doing it, and to cover 8,500 kilometers. I was zooming into Google Maps looking at the kind of locations, the kind of scenery that you must have covered, and the kind of roads. The nothingness along the way, with just emptiness and no towns, no villages anywhere. That's a serious trip. Well done to you two, and thank you so much for sharing that. Now, from Germany to Dartmoor National Park. This is from Lucas. My two friends and I rode our bikes from Cologne, Germany to Calais the day before yesterday, and then we took the ferry to Dover in England. From there, we rode along the south coast to Dartmoor National Park. And we're right at the beautiful place that you recommended in your video. Thank you so much for that. Tomorrow, we ride to Wales and Snowdonia. Lucas, this exact spot, I know where it is. Dartmoor National Park, one of the few places in England where you're allowed to wild camp. And you're literally just pulling up, set your tent up, and you can camp next to a beautiful river or stream, unspoilt scenery, and wild horses just happily standing next to you trying to steal your food. It's a magical place. And Lucas and the rest of your group have an amazing trip up to Snowdonia. That's spectacular. This is a road trip episode, really, without me meaning it to be. And I'm going to carry on with one over in the USA, Island Life. You may guess where it is just with the first line. Aloha, Freddy. I'm a motorcycle enthusiast from the Hawaiian island, I hope I get this pronunciation right, of Oahu. I think that's right. I currently own three bikes, two that I keep here on Oahu, and one that I keep at my parents in Oregon, where I was born and raised. My 2015 Harley-Davidson 48. It's been great and reliable fun cruiser that takes me all over the island with style and a rumble that turns heads and gives you that real Harley visceral feeling. My other bike on the island is Annie. Now, I know here that, Matt, both of these bikes are named after your grandmothers. I love it. My other bike's Annie, 2022 Kawasaki KLX 300. I absolutely love this bike. KLX 300, absolutely amazing. It's the Swiss Army knife of transport. Incredible in the dirt, great commuter, relatively light and agile, and it eats up distressed pavement throughout the city. There isn't a lot of off-road trails to ride here, but we do have an amazing 7-mile trail that has a campground atop one of the most gorgeous mountain roads you could imagine. I included a picture of the last trip with my buddy Ryan. The bike I keep in Oregon, that's a 2023 Kawasaki KLR 650. It's called the Green Bastard. What a name. And what it lacks in performance is made up in its sheer durability. You just point it in a direction and it goes without worries. Last year I took it from the border of Washington along the Oregon coast to the border of California. and into the Jedediah National Forest. That trip was the most cathartic experience of my life. The Oregon coast is absolutely breathtaking. Jagged cliffs, quaint small towns, river mouths, ocean rock formations, natural harbors, and immense foliage and trees filled my senses on this journey. It was one of the best experiences of my life. Recently, I've been flying over to Big Island of Hawaii. This is a dual sport adventure bike haven. I've been four times, and on two occasions, I rented the Yamaha Tenere 700. That's the pinnacle, in my eyes, of adventure bikes. That bike is just about as perfect as they come. I circled the island multiple times and stealth camped in the most secluded jungle spot along a jagged cliff. You probably can't see because I've got photos up, but I've just started smiling because I remember this next bit. The only sound I heard that night were ferocious distant waves pounding the cliff walls. Oh, imagine this, and croaking jungle frogs. I enjoyed the experience so much that I bought, listen to this, I bought a 3-acre lot of jungle land on the island months later. I own a taco truck called Dos Jefes. Aloha from Hawaii, Matt. Matt's got a YouTube channel as well with some of his beautiful rides and other stuff, so check it out. Matt, you are living the American dream there. That just that last bit, imagining what it would be like to wild camp, just with the sound of the ferocious waves in Hawaii. And then liking it so much, you went to buy your very own piece of paradise. Matt, massive congrats. That's just living the dream every day. That's really phenomenal. I move on now. I'm so sorry. I don't think you wrote your name, so I'll call you Mr. X for this. A selfless deed. Freddie, I just went on a mini adventure to purchase a Honda Grom 125 for my daughter's first bike. I agreed a price for the Grom on eBay, which is located in Wales. I'm in Birmingham. So Friday the 29th of May at 7 a.m, I caught the bus to Birmingham city centre. I then walked to the station to catch the train to Aberystwyth in Wales. From there, I was meeting the seller to drive me to his house in the middle of the sticks up a dirt track. I purchased the bike and I then rode it from Wales to Birmingham. I had no phone signal and I had to ask a local which way to Birmingham. It was an amazing trip. One of the best days of my life, and the seller was a brilliant guy. The little Honda MSX 125 Grom was brilliant and it made me fall in love with it. And I had a smile on my face all day. This is my daughter's first bike. She starts her biking journey here. She's 17 years old and her name is Chloe. Wish her luck. Chloe, welcome to biking. The best of luck with taking a CBT and I hope you love every second of it. That's from, we'll say Mr. X, apologies for not writing your name down. This is the thing with 125cc bikes. I've had some of my most amazing motorcycle memories on 125s, going around Southeast Asia and places. They're just so fun and agile and simple. And it's the pure essence of motorcycling. I would love to say that this was a noble quest you undertook to buy your daughter, Chloe, this little Grom, but you've had far, far too much fun to say that this is a noble quest. You can't have that much fun and me call it a noble quest. Massive congrats on you both. I'm sure you'll both be enjoying it. Thank you for sharing. That's brilliant. Now to bike of the week. This is from Joe from the Works, the man himself who fixed and saved my Triumph Bonneville from the scrapyard. And if Joe recommends a bike, it must go as bike of the week with his technical expertise. Joe's currently out in Spain on business, and he found in Spain, in essence, his first ever bike. This is a bike I've never come across. So I've been reading a few articles trying to understand what this bike's about, and it's slightly difficult because there isn't much information on it. First off, you probably all know of the Honda GB350. This is Honda's new retro bike. Well, the precursor, the predecessor to this, came out in 1989. It's the Honda GB500 with, and this is key, the Honda GB500 TT. Launched in 1985, production carried on all the way to 1990. I mean, I say all the way, it wasn't actually a long production run, but the key here is, in 1989, it was launched in the USA and it was sold in the USA for just 1 year. 1889 through to 1990. It was built from proven components, I think some of them dating back as far as 1979. So nothing here was groundbreaking at all. Certainly from a mechanics point of view, good, trusted, well-proven materials, engine, suspension, everything like that, just taken from older machines that have a really good reputation. So this is built on really strong foundations. The styling is where things get really interesting. Because this bike that was launched in 1989, and to the best of my knowledge, only really available over in Japan, certainly where it's launched, USA, New Zealand, and interestingly, Germany, where 1,000 were exported from the USA over to Germany in 1992, and it was called the Clubman. But apart from that, these are really scarce elsewhere. This was a very, very limited geographical run out where they launched these bikes. So imagine this, 1989, Honda decide to send this bike over to the USA. But this was a retro motorbike that came out in 1989 in the US when no one was really interested in buying retro bikes. This was a time when you had the race for pace. You had the likes of Honda, Suzuki, Yamaha, Kawasaki, all desperately vying to be the number one in terms of pure outright power and performance. Yet here's Honda bringing out a retro 25 years before, or 20 years before, retros were really even a thing. You'll guess by the name, the GB500TT. GB simply comes from Great Britain, inspired by the British bikes of the 60s, and the TT variant, even more so than that. This is inspired by the British Isle of Man Tourist Trophy TT races of the 1960s. Can you guess how successful sales were of this bike, this incredibly niche bike, 20 years before its time? Appalling, absolutely awful. That's why it sold in the USA just for a year. And I think the 1992 exports from the US to Germany were simply because they couldn't sell them in the US, so they had to somehow get rid of them, so they sent them off to Germany. Electric start, but you may also have noticed that lever on the right-hand side. It's also got a kickstart. That's a kickstart from a bike that came out in 1989. 500cc, 33 horsepower, 180 kilo weight. So everything's pleasing enough. There's nothing too crazy there. And you may think, because it was really only sold in a few countries, this is going to be quite hard to find, but it's actually not. I had no difficulty at all finding these. But this is a niche bike. And a lot of the time, even if they were awful sellers at the time, niche bikes command a premium. And that's especially true of this. £4,500 plus you're going to need for one of these now 36-year-old bikes. I found the first year, interestingly, of production. Facebook Marketplace listed 24 days ago, £4,750, Honda GB500TT. Originally, here we go, only originally made for the US and Japan. There you go. This one was imported from the USA in 1991 when it was wrongly given an H registration plate. When the bike was in fact a 1989 model, so it should have had an F plate on it. I've owned since 2009, in which time I've had the wheels rebuilt, yada, yada, yada. Passed several MOTs, the annual checks, always been my second bike, together with a few spares I've picked up along the way. New air filter, ready to go. And you can see the influence there of those old British bikes. In fact, the first thing I thought when I saw that, is Norton Commando. Got, in my eyes, certainly some very definite design elements from that. And there we go, an incredibly rare, very, very niche Honda to wrap up. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. I really hope you enjoyed the video. Have a brilliant week. I'll see you in the next one.